This message is presented to you by International Herald Tribune Audio News. Gossip Boy, but just for a day. Gore Vidal, it is said, advised us never to pass up a chance to have sex or appear on television. Many have learned through brutal experience the spectacular and wisdom of the first admonition. I now have personal knowledge of the folly of the second. I am making a brief cameo appearance on the CW series Gossip Girl this month. But I won't be able to see it, I'm afraid. I will be catching a flight to foreign parts. I'm thinking Godthaab, Greenland. You don't know Godthaab? It's that blip at the tip of that giant iceberg of a country that appears on the electronic in-flight map as you wing back from London to New York. I've always been curious about Godthaab. Greenland's capital, in fact, also known as Nuuk. But my impromptu trip was not mere tourism. Godthaab seems like the kind of place where television options would be limited, and thus Gossip Girl would be absolutely unknown. The story is as follows. Some months ago a note popped into my email inbox with an intriguing subject line, Gossip Girl, television cameo. Human vanity being what it is, I opened and read an invitation to appear as myself on that glossy television series about naughty doings at a fancy schmancy private school in Manhattan. I have no pretensions to competence as a performer, no buried ambition to toss aside the critical head and enter the messy scrum of the acting world. If you read a newspaper, you probably know that the newspaper business is not in the pink these days. Still, visions of a lucrative new career making cameo appearances? A festive, boozy lunch with the Real Housewives of New York City? An appearance as friend of transgendered murder victim on Law and Order, SVU? Did not dance through my mind. In fact, I share the general and altogether respectable horror of speaking before audiences of any kind. So my instinct was to decline, politely. But what would my nieces Carmen and Katrina say? Scarier still would be the affronted reaction of my gay friends addicted to the show. While I would never claim much range as a performer, I was fairly confident that the role of self would fall securely within it. Also, as someone who makes a living assessing the achievements of people who have the courage to risk making fools of themselves every day, to be a good actor is to be fearless about emotional self-exposure. I knew it would be cowardly to say no. And then there's that whole vanity thing. 3 days later, I found myself being picked up at my door for my day of shooting at a theater on Grand Street on the Lower East Side. I had received my sides. That's actor talk for script pages. The day before, I was given 3 lines in a scene set backstage after a high school theater performance. Instantly dashed were my fantasies of delivering some Madison DeWitt type acerbities, good-naturedly playing into the popular notion of the critic as a viper who cannot open his mouth without savaging somebody or something. The lines I was given were more anodyne. I briefly considered lodging a gentle protest but figured it would be a little immodest to request that my lines, all 3 of them, be guest written by the staff of 30 Rock. The first shock, after the small free song of being chauffeured to the set, it was a van, but still came when I discovered I would be given my own trailer for the half day or so of shooting. My name was even on the door, scribbled on a bit of blue tape, but still. That's when things begin to turn slowly and inexorably wrong. Yes, I blame the trailer. As I was ushered to wardrobe, thumbs up for the outfit I'd brought, and hair, thumbs up for obvious lack thereof, the insidious sensation of trailer worthiness began quietly to unsettle my mind. If my participation was deemed sufficiently important to warrant a trailer, nothing too glam and the plumbing was wonky, but still then those 3 lines must be mighty significant. Had I perhaps been too cavalier about memorizing them? Would it not have been wise to rehearse before an audience other than my cat? Jane seemed none too impressed, but then cats are famously unimpressed creatures. While the teamsters tinkered with the plumbing, I ran through my bits of dialogue over and over, the paper becoming moist and flimsy in my sweating hands. The teamsters also seemed unimpressed, but I believe that is characteristic too. By the time I was led to the set for my big scene, I had reached a pitch of anxiety that I had never experienced, and hope never to again. Rather than appear before the cameras, I would have gladly faced a firing squad. Or worse, A ravening mob made up of every actor, author or director I had ever panned. Arriving on the backstage set where I would perform, I was introduced to the actor, Harmon Walsh, to whom I would be speaking my lines. A new source of anxiety, possibly more unhinging than the trailer. It should have occurred to me, I know, that appearing on Gossip Girl would probably mean mixing among the more god and goddess-like of mortals. I am not a regular watcher of the show, but I know enough to know it's stocked with young beauties of both sexes. And it's not just that Walsh, while not a regular on the show, was handsome enough to be one. That might have been bearable. But my mark? That's more actor speak for where you're supposed to stand. Was 2 inches away from him, or so it seemed. Before I could get comfortable with this instant intimacy and banish from my mind despairing thoughts about pores and plans for teeth whitening processes, I was delivering my lines. Or rather attempting to. The first take went O.K. But afterward the script supervisor gently pointed out that I'd left out an adverb. This had been done on purpose? Once a critic, always a critic? But I agreed to read it again as written. Bad idea. I kept tripping up on this, my third and most challenging line, of 24 or so words. The question of pores now returned to the front of the brain as they began spritzing flop sweat. It's not that I couldn't infuse the line with enough emotive substance to please a Stanislavski. No, I'm afraid the words I had been relentlessly drilling for the past 24 hours? To the cat, to the refrigerator, to empty elevators and to the brisk air of Madison Square Park? Wouldn't come at all. The next few minutes have been erased from my memory, presumably by an instinctive reaction akin to that which makes victims of trauma unable to recall the event itself. But I would not be surprised to be told that instead of the dialogue from the script, I began spouting assorted lyrics from West Side Story, vestigial bits of a seventh grade book report, directions from the back of a shampoo bottle or a recipe for ginger snaps. I am pretty confident that at no point did the 24 words of that fatal sentence emerge in the proper order. Like most of life's ordeals, junior high, oral surgery, recessions, one prays the occasional American presidency. My stint in the television spotlight eventually came to an end. I was even given a friendly send-off, in the form of warm applause by the cast and crew, perhaps because they were relieved to get back to work with professionals. And I have to admit, despite the ultimate horror of those few minutes, the day as a whole was rather enjoyable. From the episode's director, Norman Buckley, Betty's brother, interestingly to the wardrobe and makeup people to the friendly extra who commiserated with me on my awkward debut as I left the set, everyone involved was friendly, professional and efficient. For all the hubbub of film and television work, it seemed an exciting way to spend your days. Obviously a career before the cameras is not an option. The invitation to join the Screen Actors Guild has been ceremonially shredded. But maybe there are other opportunities. Remind me what a gaffer does again? This message was presented to you by International Herald Tribune Audio News. Powered by ReedSpeaker.